It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Another great guest here on the Sports Objective Heroes right now. In fact, one of the original guests on the Sports Objective is play-by-play voice for ECU Baseball, Pirate IMG Sports Radio Network, and that is Corey Glore. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. Thanks for having me back. You told me before we started I was one of your first guests, and I was very flattered that I was asked back so soon, and I didn't just destroy the thing immediately back in the spring. So I'm glad things are thriving for you, gentlemen, even after my first appearance.
No, I was going to say, if I didn't destroy it, then nobody else would. A lot of crazy things happened. The good news is we have our Bubba and Kyle join me in July, and the rest is history. And here we are going strong 4 months later. And then here we are talking about, I can't believe it's a rainy, cold November night, and it's not even hot stove time, and we're talking about baseball. But I can talk, like you, Corey and Bubba, I can talk baseball 365. So we wanted to have you on and get a kind of a sneak peek, a preview, if you will, of Pirate baseball coming up for 2019.
It's always okay to talk baseball with yours truly here. I needed about 2 weeks during the MLB playoffs to kind of decompress as my beloved Brewers fell very just shy of the World Series. And that stung, I won't lie, but now I'm ready to go, especially since I was just back out in Greenville not too long ago and just kind of driving around and being back out there. Made me kind of yearn for February to come around here pretty quick.
I know with the schedule, first I guess we could talk schedule. The schedule came out, and as soon as it came out, I thought Corey Glore. So that's why I said, Bubba, we got to get Corey on. So let's start there. Give us a... I've seen the schedule, and a lot of Pirate fans listening right now have, but let's kind of go over the schedule and kind of get familiar with it. Can we do that?
Yeah, I'm down with it.
Yeah, I would say one of the things, when I took a look at the schedule, obviously I saw only 29 home games, which is the fewest we've had since 2005, the first year we played at Clark McClair. And the reason we only had 28 that year is because we spent the first 3 weekends on the road because the ballpark was still under construction. But I'm taking a look at this year's slate. You have 11 of the first 12 at home. So that stood out, and that's not unusual. That's pretty typical to play most of those early season games at home. But then getting toward the middle of the year, you see from March 29th to April 16th, you have 11 out of 12 on the road, and that includes series at USF, Houston, and UCLA. And then you have midweek games with UNC Wilmington and Elon mixed in, and the only home game during that stretch is against Duke, which is of course a return trip from last year. So that's what really stood out to me as far as the critical stretch of the season.
Yeah, that stretch right there, I mean, that sticks out like a sore thumb, that 12 game stretch where, I mean, you talk about USF, Houston, UCLA, these are all tournament teams that you're visiting in weekend series. UNCW, obviously a tournament team. We remember what happened earlier this June. Duke made the super regional last year, and they are the only home game in that mix. Now, we don't know what these teams will look like and shape out to be come, you know, March into April of next year. But on paper, that is one brutal slate of games, and it counterbalances that opening stretch, Bubba, where – yeah, 11 out of 12 at home to start. It is a little bit strange for this program, particularly under Cliff, to have that front-loaded of a home schedule. Usually, there's like the second weekend of the year, there's some form of road trip. Or 2 years ago was a season opening trip to Ole Miss. Last year, it was that traveling series with North Carolina. They've had that trip to Virginia before in that second weekend of the year. They try to kind of weave in an early road trip weekend in that part of the season. Now with conference play needing a bye week, I think that probably negates the need for that, and that's why the UCLA series it pops up there in April. But 11 out of 12 at home to start off the year is going to be a bigger test than I think people will probably realize. The names aren't that appealing of the competition there with a Marist and a Monmouth and all that stuff coming in. But you can get pretty complacent at home, especially early on in the season. So that's going to be a more challenging stretch there, I feel, than people realize starting off the season.
Yeah, I'm going to say something else that stood out to me about that initial stretch, I believe it is you have a Monday game, which is pretty unusual against Air Force. So I don't know if that was just kind of dictated by Air Force's travel or what, but that was kind of strange.
Yeah, the last Monday game I remember this team playing was, I think, my first year with the team, and they wound up playing a Monday game at NC State, and then they followed it up with a Tuesday game at High Point. It was a very strange 1-2 punch that they had, and that was in 2016. With Air Force, I mean, with how far that they are traveling, they are right nearby in Kinston the weekend before to take on Navy for a special series. So to kind of pluck them for a game on Monday before they head back out to the mountains, it's a savvy pickup when Air Force is going to be that close by, to kind of get another little RPI boost of a game on there for a team that you would not put on the schedule and not see much at all, unless it's a special circumstance, to kind of sneak that game in there on a Monday. It's going to, four game weekends are going to be a early sign of what this team can flaunt in terms of its depth. And that's going to be, that's probably the first weekend for me on the schedule that will be kind of a mark it down your book and see how this team comes through that, because a lot of college baseball teams are not built for four games in 4 days. And we'll see how ECU pans out there in that, what is it, that second weekend of the year.
Corey, I had a question. I was just wondering if you can help me out, because you're a baseball expert. Is the field still not ready for NC State? Is that why we can't play them this year?
Well, first of all, thank you again for the moniker, baseball expert. I will put that on a placard, or I'll put that on a license plate and drive around with that.
All right.
I'm very flattered by that. The field, as far as I know, the field will not be ready in the 2019 season for an ECU-NC State matchup. It's going to be ready for a football game in a couple weeks, but not for a baseball game next spring.
All right. I was just checking. The other thing is that comes to mind is with this tough schedule, and maybe I'm just putting too much on it, but what came to mind when I've already looked at it and hearing both of you guys talk is, do you think Cliff knows that he has a really good team and he's challenging the team to get them ready for the postseason?
Oh, I think there could be part of that. I think Cliff knows that this roster, if everyone stays healthy, is a dangerous roster under his belt, and probably the most dangerous he has had. Now this is his first true year where everybody, with the exception of one that comes to mind, the only holdover from the previous era would be Evan Balaba. But everyone else is Cliff's now on this team. And coincidentally or not so, this happens to be on paper the strongest looking team that he has had. Is it part of the idea to put a schedule together like this to test them? Maybe. I would lean more towards, with all the kind of national overlook that the American gets at the baseball conference around this sport, having a schedule that is this loaded on the road is going to turn some heads if ECU can make it through that. They know that they have what you would probably mark down as winnable games at home early on the season, and then the conference play is such a crapshoot that if you can balance out what you have at home with some really challenging road tests that are almost win-win scenarios, where if you win those games, fantastic. If you lose them, there's an understanding as to why. I would lean more towards that schedule being put together as something for the committee to look at if the Pirates are in position again to make the tournament, if they're in position again to host a regional, and maybe something more. because when you look at the road slate that this team has, it's as good as anybody's in the country.
Something else we haven't even mentioned about the road slate yet. We talked about that stretch from late March to mid-April, but how about the road games that we have midweek at Ole Miss and Mississippi State?
Right. That two game set is fascinating. Like, and not just for the quality of the teams in those 48 hours, is we know what Ole Miss is, we know what Mississippi State has been, but you add in, of course, the background with Cliff and Ole Miss and coming from there, and 2 years ago when this team opened up there and it was a very strange weekend for Cliff. He admitted as much, that it was a very uncomfortable weekend for him. But to go back there, to go back to kind of what launched him to becoming this head coach of this team, and then Mississippi State, who made a push for Cliff in the offseason and wound up going elsewhere, and Cliff wound up getting an extension at ECU off of that. The storylines are writing themselves for that two-game series. It's also not your normal spring break trip where, you know, 2 years ago it was a trip to College of Charleston, which is a decent program, but it's not quite the level of competition. It's not the SEC, and that's what you get to experience 2 days in a row on the road. You kind of wish more programs would do stuff like this that you don't really see a ton of around the sport, and credit to Cliff, credit to Jeff Palumbo, who helps really compile the schedule, for putting this two-punch, you know, week on this schedule for spring break, and not just giving these guys, you know, a little bit of a vacation somewhere to play a team on a beach or a team in the South or whatever the case might be. They're going to go out and they're going to play some of the best talent that the best conference in the nation has to offer. And if they can walk out of that with a win or two, then that's that speaks large to what this team can do this year.
And another series that I haven't even mentioned is at Maryland. Of course, Maryland's had some good teams in recent years after having largely struggled, and they started to turn around a little bit under Eric Bakich, and then the coach whose name escapes me that followed him really kept it going.
Yeah, Maryland is one of those teams that always seem to be sniffing around the top of the Big Ten, and it's so weird to say that they're a Big Ten team, but it's kind of the only program that's flexing their muscle in their new conference in that school. What got me about this series is that it's in middle of March, and the weather up in that part of the country in that time of year is so unpredictable that there is going to be more than just playing that team in front of a crowd that's going to be probably a little bit thinner. Maryland has a decent fan support, but not great amounts, particularly at that time of year. You're going to be battling some elements that a lot of these guys haven't really played in that three-game series. That's why I was a little surprised, where I knew that UCLA series was coming this year. I did not know Maryland was going to be on the schedule, and I thought those two initially, when I heard about them, would probably be flipped on the calendar a little bit to try and get a little bit better weather when you head up to College Park. But Big Ten season and American seasons wouldn't line up, and so you get to go up to the Northeast a month into the year when it could be 30 degrees and could be snowing. So that's going to be a mental resolve sort of series, regardless of how quality Maryland is as a baseball program, and they're usually pretty dang good.
Corey, I wanted to know, as far as other sports, I would imagine it's the same thing with baseball, college baseball in this particular case. Do these trips they go on, is that an opportunity for Godwin and all the coaching staff to recruit, or is this just for the competition alone?
There's no real – like, they can't go out over the course of a weekend, or at least I haven't seen it, where they're actually going out and visiting recruits when they're on these road trips. They might be hosting someone at one of these games.
Right.
But I think it's more for – one, to test the roster and challenge these guys with some really unique road trips. But two, it's also to kind of get the name ECU further spread around the country, where there is still kind of a side eye glare towards the American as a baseball conference, where you get this brand out to the Pac-12 side of the country. You get it infiltrating into the SEC. You go up to the Northeast, and you get it up there in the Big Ten country, in a pretty fertile baseball recruiting ground up there in the Northeast. So you get the image of ECU out there, and if you can land a recruit or two off of that, then it's kind of a domino effect more than anything. Add on to it just what the quality of schools you have that you're going to see. And if you can say, we went across the country, we went to Los Angeles, and we won a series against UCLA, you can tell it to a California kid, and then you say, oh, by the way, we also play this quality competition here, here, and here, which you're not going to get in the Pac-12. It's a big selling point. And so that's why you're seeing this push over the last, you know, two seasons to do road games and road series like this.
Last year it was we had the Washington series. So this year for the Pac-12, we have UCLA.
Yeah, Washington wound up a World Series team last year, which was maybe one of the biggest head scratchers, and kind of speaks to the randomness that can exist in a baseball NCAA tournament. Because when the Pirates went out to Seattle, Washington was a pretty mediocre club, not just from my eyes, but just from the what they had done leading up to that. And then they were able to kind of kick it into gear. They had to go cross country for their regional. They won the Coastal Carolina regional, and then just kind of found a way to put it together at the right time. So UCLA has been another one of those programs that has danced around in the NCAA tournament pretty regularly. And so to go out there and to test yourself against a completely different type of baseball conference too. It's not just the location, but the Pac-12 operates differently, where it's pitching and defense. It's how the national championship was won this year by Oregon State. It challenges every element of your roster. It's not just, can you hit the ball hard and hit it out of the park? Can you move guys from station to station? It's, can you play sound defense? Can you make the pitches when you need to? It tests every element of what you want a good, high-quality baseball team to be. So there are many layers to series like this. And what's interesting, guys, is not too long ago, Cliff told me and others that he was never a fan of going west of the Mississippi because the travel back was always a nightmare for teams on the East Coast. And that's why you see these double headers out west on those Saturdays. You had one in Seattle last year. I think rain wound up making that a Friday doubleheader. But and then you have a Saturday doubleheader scheduled for UCLA. There's a reason for that. It's the travel back for ECU to take that all-day Sunday to kind of recuperate from a journey like that. But I think Cliff has now realized the impact of having series like that on the schedule and having time still to kind of rest and recover from it. It worked out beautifully last year, and hopefully it does again next year.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Corey, when it comes to baseball, and certainly I know that we talked before and you don't pay attention to recruiting. How about Coach Godwin? Hit a handful of guys in the last few days.
Yeah, I have seen that, and it's, you know, yeah, you and I have discussed before. I don't pay a ton of attention to recruiting during the season. I'm keeping up with it here in the off season, and there are like five guys that Cliff and Jeff and Dan Rozelle plucked, not just from North Carolina, but from around the country, high level recruits. There's a ton of momentum that just keeps on snowballing and rolling downhill with what this team is doing, what this program is doing. And that's why, you know, all the talk shortly after this team's season ended in June as to whether or not Cliff was going to go to Mississippi State, whether he could turn down SEC money a second time since being an ECU head coach. Like, how many times can he say no to that? Well, there's a reason why he's saying no to that. And because he understands just exactly what is forming here. And that is, if everyone stays their part, if everyone's able to stay on the field, then this is a legitimate World Series contending team next season. And so to make that message clear to ECU fan base and make it clear to the players that he's brought in and make it clear to the coaches that he's brought in and getting them, you know, locked in a little bit more and getting them raises over the summer. The consistency that this program has now put in place is hard to replicate at any level. And that's why you're seeing these big recruits, not just from this area, but around the country, turning their heads to what is building in Greenville. It's not a mistake and it's not a fluke why all of this seems to be trending upward, even though this team hosted a regional last year, and you can't help but think, how much higher can this go? Well, there are more steps to climb, and that's what you're seeing kind of built right now, and the last couple of days have really shined a light on that.
I think we have now Kyle from LaGrange. Kyle, are you here?
I am here, guys. Corey.
We decided against we were billing this as where you were holding out for more money, like $1,500 for the interview. So I guess that you decided against it.
Well, you know, we're still in negotiations, and you know, I'm showing up right now. My agent will be in touch with you, David.
Okay,
but,
you like Le'Veon Bell?
We thought you showed up.
You like Le'Veon Bell? We thought you missed at least the whole interview, or maybe the whole baseball season.
No. Yeah, you'll be hearing from my agent. In the meantime, I'm showing up.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. Corey, I always enjoy listening to your call for baseball. You and Coach O, and particularly I enjoy interacting with you guys on Twitter during the games. Just for a personal note, there, you often read my tweets during the game. I think that's a cool aspect of y'all's broadcast. Your interaction with the fans on Twitter.
Yeah, and I believe you and Bubba are both pretty active in that regard, and I've mentioned your guys' name many more times. And you're going to have to forgive me here, Bubba, but I believe I ran into you.
You did.
On.
It was your first season back in
2016. We were
heading back
from Charlottesville. Yes, at the classiest seats I've ever seen in my life in Lynchburg, Virginia. Yes, that second weekend of the year.
I think it was
the
first sheet.
Yes. Yeah. And so I got, you're truly the first like fan interaction I've had as an ECU baseball broadcaster. And that kind of, whether it was that interaction, it might've been, frankly, I was still trying to get my feet wet, back in 16, that was 5-6 games into my career there. Meeting you, Bubba, kind of sparked the idea of reaching out and doing some things on social media. And I think that the broadcast of baseball, the pace of the game, just lends to having people chime in and kind of interacting with them if possible. And, you know, I will maintain for as long as I do this job in this industry, I work in the toy department of a department store. Like I get to sit and watch sports and talk about it with a microphone in front of my face. It's a hell of a lot of fun. And so there's no reason to not try and have fun on these broadcasts. And part of that for me, part of that, and a lot of it for Coach O, is to hear from all of you guys and to hear from you, Bubba, to hear from you, Kyle, and you, David, and all the fans throughout a broadcast. And it's, you know, it means a lot to us when people interact and chime in, because it means that, one, you're listening. Two, you seem to be liking what we're doing. Or if you don't like what we're doing, you at least like the team. And so our job is to kind of bring you the story of the team. And if we can bring you into that tale and we be in, that's even better. And so, you know, there's not many sports that lend to being able to doing that in broadcasting. You know, it's trickier with a faster paced sport like football or basketball. But for baseball, I mean, and particularly this baseball program, which, you know, as I've come to realize over my years calling this team, just what this program means to this university and to this fan base, to get as many people involved with this as I can from my little perch at Clark LeClaire, wherever this team takes me, it's a thrill. Like, it's a blast to do. And you know, the only thing that kind of trumps being able to interact with the ECU fans in doing this job is being able to interact with the families of these players and these players themselves. Like the community that exists around this program is still kind of strange for me, where I'm not from an area that has college baseball really on its forefront. It doesn't really exist in the Midwest. And so to experience it still at the fervor that it exists in Greenville is pretty overwhelming at times. And the last time I sat in that booth, I still couldn't quite believe just what it was like there in that stadium. And to know that there are people out there that want to have as much fun with that broadcast as I do, that makes it even more exciting to do.
Now, Corey, you're talking about adding color to the broadcast and that sort of thing. Something I really enjoyed last season was when you and Josh Graham, y'all would talk on a weekly basis, and he would have his listeners tweet in different movie lines and things of that nature. And y'all would go over those weekly on 94.3 The Game. Of course, Josh has since moved on to WSJS in Winston-Salem.
Yeah, but I took him away from you guys. Yeah. He's over in my neck of the woods now. And we hang out from time to time over here. He called me up. This was probably about 2-3 weeks before the season started last year, and kind of floated the idea to me. And I knew that I'm a hockey fan as well. And there was a broadcast.
I knew I liked you.
There we go. Even though I had some very sad hockey in Raleigh not too long ago, but a broadcaster by the name of Randy Moeller with the Florida Panthers. He no longer does the radio, but he used to be the radio guy. And every time the Panthers would score a goal, he would have just a random movie line or music lyric that he shouted out to celebrate the goal that were sent in from fans. And that was the genesis of the idea from Josh. And I had listened. I've spent many a time falling into a YouTube wormhole of Randy Moeller radio calls. And so I knew exactly what he was going for, and I was all for it. And we kind of took it and ran with it. And again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, all of you guys out there took it and ran with it too. And there were two elements of it that were really cool. One, how much Coach O loved it. Because I would kind of film and I would show him the lines I needed to do before each game or before each weekend. And he would kind of point out which ones would be challenging and which ones would be easy. And he really had a thrill with that. And then when the team kind of started finding out that I was doing it, Spencer Brickhouse really took to it. And so he would, at the end of the year, about the last third of the season, he would give me lines before every game that I would try to work in as well. And so now, you know, what the status of this is in 2019, with Josh no longer steering the ship out there at the game, I'm going to do what I can to bring it back. And maybe I'll have to just rely on Twitter to get all of your suggestions and maybe Spencer. But it was one of those things where it kind of challenges me as a broadcaster to find a organic way to weave in some just ridiculous things to say and have it make sense and have it kind of work in the flow of a game. I took it kind of personally to make sure that, you know, when I had one of those lines drop in, it made sense as much as it could with what was happening around me. I wasn't just screaming it out for no apparent reason. So it kind of, every time I would sit down and I would open up my portfolio and there would be the list of lines, I'd say, all right, what situation could work here, 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 and here? I probably did more prep work on that than any game broadcast and any opponent, frankly. It was such a blast.
What movie have you quoted the most lines from during a game? Is there one particular movie that you quoted multiple lines from?
I don't know about during a game. We tried to vary it up pretty decently.
Well, throughout the season.
Throughout the season, I would, you know, they found out pretty early that I'm not a wrestling fan, and so they would give me a lot of. Yeah, they would give me a lot of wrestling lines, and I think Bubba contributed some. And then
with this leg wrestling.
Oh, okay, there we go.
No, but you're right, Corey. Even though I don't really follow wrestling, I did contribute some wrestling lines.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not a hip hop fan, and so they would also give me some they threw in a lot of Drake lyrics for me. Which I'm not, I
only love my bed and my mama. I'm sorry.
Yes. That was a DeWanya William Sutton reference right there. And, I think it was a stolen base, I believe in Charlotte. That's where I'm trying to go with that.
Corey, I got one for you. You're wrestling to get in. I'm going to go ahead and get it in early.
First one of the year.
Yeah. I spit in the face of people who don't want to be cool.
Oh, I'm writing it down. I spit in the face of people who don't want
to be cool.
Now, I'll say this, and I'll float this out there, gentlemen. I'm calling ECU basketball at Georgia Tech. Should I try to weave this into the
Would be awesome.
Oh, my
that
God.
That would be awesome.
We're going to be listening. We're definitely going to be listening on Friday night.
Yes.
So.
Yes, that, if you could do that.
I spit in the face of people who don't want to be cool.
That's right, yes.
All right, I'll do what I can. It is
maybe
written down.
Like a
I'm putting it with my basketball stuff now.
Yeah, like Corey, what I was going to say a minute ago is during the 2019 season, like you said, since Josh has moved on, I think we need to carry this on, and maybe we can do this via the Sports Objective podcast as opposed to 94.3. So.
Yeah, I mean, you might have to take the torch here. I have not spoken with Patrick Johnson, who's now kind of taken over at the game yet. So, I mean, maybe there's a bartering situation to be had here. But I want to keep it going. And so wherever the genesis of that is for 2019, just steer me in a spot and I'll be there.
And not only that, I was going to say, sorry, Bubba. I was going to say that we wanted to mention, too, that we're going to try to do more. As you know a little bit, Corey, we're going to try to do more baseball coverage as well, so than normal, and try to help out the program as much as we can, and hope we can have you on after the games and stuff like that.
Yeah, you let me know, and I will, like Kyle, have my agent get in touch with you and set up a payment system.
Yeah, that's an inside joke, but we'll explain to you after the podcast.
Okay.
No doubt about it. So, Corey, I want to ask you, what was it like? Because I can tell you right now that I was watching on television, had to work, and it was one of those bad situations. But anyway, what was it like with that Wilmington game, the million-hour delay?
Oh, God.
That one inning, the one inning that I wish I could go, it's haunting me now. I try not to think about it. Have you thought about it since, and can you give us an idea of what that was like being a broadcaster and you're pulling hard? I know you try to be as objective as you can because you're the announcer, but you get to know these guys, the coaches. It was absolutely torture.
Yeah, that's a good word. You guys watched the team and followed the team all last season. That may have been, even if you take out the situation and what was on the line, that may have been the worst inning of baseball that they played all year. Like, it just, if you put that just a game in the middle of March, like against, you know, Campbell, like that inning is still just absolutely horrendous. And then you add in everything that was in play with, you know, winner there keeps season alive and goes to the regional final where you're still up against a wall, but at least you're not done. And then you add in all of the rain delays that happened that day, and you go back to that Saturday where rain impacted everything, where the South Carolina game didn't start until 9 p.m. That inning kind of encapsulated what was a pretty agonizing 48 hours for ECU baseball, and what was such a great celebration at the start on Friday to have it unravel like that was jarring. Like, and it just seemed like it came from nowhere where they had a 5-0 lead. They grabbed a run right after the rain delay ended. And then maybe even 2 runs. Now I think about it after the rain delay ended, and then just boom, like it just went away, like, and it just kept going and going and going. And then it was the exclamation mark on that whole inning was there was the blown call at first base that would have ended the inning, and then two more runs would score right after that. And then two runs winds up being the difference when you look back at the final. And baseball, you know, I'm not usually the guy that, you know, plays out the hypotheticals in hindsight where you say, like, oh, you know, if the guy didn't get caught stealing, that base hit would have scored him. Situations dictate different things. And so would those two extra runs have changed much for ECU? I don't know. But it just all felt like, you know, if you believe in the baseball gods, they started conspiring throughout the last 2 days of the regional for ECU. That was, you know, there are ways to lose. There are ways to end a season. And then there was that, like that, that was cruel. And, you know, I probably, I won't lie, the couple of days after that regional ended were a lot of, like, me sitting around back here in Winston and saying, you know, damn, like that was, like, I've never seen anything like that. And then you start, you know, you time heals all wounds, and you start moving forward, and you start realizing just what this program is building and continues striving towards. And that, yeah, it was a crushing end to a pretty magical year, but you just kind of keep holding on, saying, well, look at what's returning, look at what's coming back, look at all the pieces that are still in place to make a run next year, and you hope it comes through next year, and that they don't fall short of a super regional and don't fall short of a World Series. I mean, it was rough. There's no way around it. But time has passed, and now you're kind of steering towards a team that is built, frankly, even stronger than the one a season ago.
Corey Young, so you referenced the roster, and of course, after the 2016 season, Baseball America had its one of eight for Omaha in 2017. And of course, we all know what happened in 2017 with the unbelievable amount of injuries and that sort of thing. Of course, last year we did what we did with hosting, and then Baseball America made that same projection going into the 2019 season. You have household names like Packard, Brickhouse, Washer, Turner Brown, et cetera. And then on the mound, you, of course, have the likes of Benton, Agnos, Tyler Smith, and Gavin Williams, and so on. Tell Pirate Nation some of the names to watch out for, both positionally and on the mound, and new faces in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting for one of you to bring up the 2017 year, because it does feel kind of similar heading into this season as it did heading into 2017. There's no way around that. And where they wind up sitting in preseason rankings, they were as high as sixth in 2017. I don't think they'll be that high, but they'll be sniffing around the top 10 heading into the preseason. But the different, I mean, injuries are injuries. And what I think gets overlooked a little bit from last year, guys, that this team had almost the same number of injuries in 2018 that they did in 2017. But the difference was they went through it in 2017. And so no one was really panicked about suddenly being thrust into spots they weren't really used to. So now this team is probably better situated to handle just a glut of injuries, were that to be the case coming up in 2019. Now, that being said, Christian Smallwood's the guy that's getting all the attention right now. This is like a light tower power sort of guy, the JUCO transfer that has come in. And you add in, I mean, this team loses the Wanye's bat. This team loses Connor Litton's bat, who was such a revelation last year. Team loses Andrew Henriksen's bat, who became a very consistent force at the end of last season, kind of at the top of the order. But they have kind of reloaded with some strong bats, and Smallwood's the main guy. He's going to be slotted into one of those open outfield spots, and put him with Packard and Washer and Brickhouse, and you're talking about a foursome there at the top of the order in some capacity that, you know, find any lineup in the American that will have as much power as those four will be able to bring to the table. Like that you're not going to get it. Like it's pretty obscene what those four will be able to do if they're able to stay healthy. Connor Norby's the other guy, the freshman that's come in from Kernersville, where there's an open spot at third that he's challenging for. And Nick Barber is also kind of challenging him for that spot, but he's impressed a lot in fall ball. And so, you know, could a freshman step in at the hot corner and kind of take the reins early? There's still an injury situation with Turner Brown, but hopefully it's rectified by the calendar turning and heading into spring. But Connor Norby's kind of the other guy initially that I've seen at the World Series and the scrimmages against Virginia and Pitt that has kind of raised eyebrows a little bit. So those are kind of the two guys that have gotten all the accolades to start that I think fans are going to be very excited to see come mid-February.
I want to ask you, speaking of the Purple Gold World Series and the scrimmages, can you talk a little bit about, I know it's obviously preseason, it's scrimmages, it's not real, like, it's not the real deal as far as the regular season, but what impressed you the most, or is there things, maybe question marks that we, you know, can you give us the good and the bad, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know how many questions can be answered in scenarios like this when you're still, I mean, it's like answering a question in spring football games. Like, what can you actually pick out? I mean, the answer is not a lot. But I think what having these new scrimmages does, where you can play three games that don't count against your schedule against whomever, is that it gives you an opportunity to see, you know, your new pieces against live opponent competition in a relatively stress-free environment, but see what they've got early and see what you need to work on and go hard after into fall ball and then after the Christmas break. So this is NCAA made a lot of rule changes and did a lot of things over the offseason to try and enhance the game, however you want to phrase it. Doing this, adding these three potential scrimmage games in the fall is one of the best ideas they've had. It's not, you know, the Purple Gold World Series, that's a fun event to have on campus. What does it kind of show about the team? You know, the team's playing the team, and so you're not going to find out, frankly, a ton. But to have these games against a Virginia, against a Pitt CC, and just to throw out there, you know, what do we truly have right now at this moment against a team that's doing the exact same thing? Those benefits can last. And so to get a couple wins, to have some very good pitching out of those two scrimmages, this team is going to be deep in the pitching staff again. They think this bullpen is going to be even deeper than it was a season ago. To complement the names that we've already mentioned to kind of head the rotation. And it started showing early, like in those scrimmages. This team will go as far as its pitching will take them, in my mind. That's just kind of the sport. And with how this team is made up, it should take them pretty far.
As far as the when you're talking about the players and all that, and the new guys, do you think one question I have is, I asked you before when you were on the very beginning, we had you on a few times during the regular season. I know everybody talks about Omaha. Is this a team that could, you think, can have a chance, that potential to make it to at least a super regional this year?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, you know, you're not going, you know, the team will have their goals set and some will be secret. Some will be more public. I know Cliff and the coaching staff are still working on the phrase, that the motto for next year's team, where last year was be where your feet are, and they actually took that, and it wasn't a cliche. Like, they operated by that mantra. It will be, I would imagine, the motto will be something similar. You guys remember, I think we all do, in 2017, where the program kind of leaned into the Destination Omaha sort of slogan that was being pushed around, and the year was a disappointing one. They're not going to do that again this year, but make no mistake, internally, the goals will be higher than hosting a regional. Like the makeup of this team is built for super regional hosting and is built for World Series participation. Like that's the type of, you know, that's the type of group that are in place right now. Extenuating circumstances can change everything. And we know what the randomness and the oddities of an NCAA regional can bring. And I think one of the dangers of the makeup of baseball's postseason is that if a team, particularly a host team, is eliminated in a regional, that it's automatically considered a disappointment. And that was the initial theory and thought process after last year's ending. And I get that at the forefront, but you know, a 44 win season is not a fluke, and one bad inning did you in. The NCAA regional is a completely different animal. It should not be this setup, frankly. It doesn't lend to the best teams making its way through, but that's the setup that we have. But this team's built for further than that. It's just whether or not it can be put into place.
Okay, now, Corey, obviously your first season was 2016 when we advanced to the Super Regional last. That call at UVA when Travis Watkins, of course, hit the walk-off to advance us into the championship game against William & Mary. Now, was that your would you consider that to be your favorite call that you've ever been a part of?
Oh, I mean, it's certainly that's a good question. It's certainly the most lasting of my brief time in the booth. I mean, that's I remember early part of last season, I was chatting with Cliff. We did a coaches show together. We did a couple radio shows together. And he did kind of gently mock me about my voice cracking during that call, which he was not the first one to ridicule me on that, nor will he be the last. The entire moment and that whole inning maybe my favorite inning that this team has had in my time, because they were down 5-2 entering that ninth inning, and suddenly Virginia could not get anybody out. And you know, whoever, you know, I don't know if any of you guys were there at that game.
I was.
Yeah, I mean, that game was frustrating. That was a really agonizing game. The Pirates had chance after chance to dent the scoreboard, and they just couldn't find a way to do it. And it just kind of seemed destined that they were not going to be sticking around much longer after that game. And then suddenly that inning unfolded, and it was just hit after hit after hit. There was a sack bunt dropped in there by Turner Brown, and then bang. It was my first walk-off home run call ever calling baseball, and I know it was Travis's first ever walk-off home run at any level. And then you add in what it turned into the next day and where that team went the following weekend. It certainly has the most lasting impact of any of the games, any of the calls in the 3 years that I've been around.
Now, a funny story about that Charlottesville regional. My dad and I were up there with a couple of other Pirates, and the following day, we were, of course, at the William & Mary game. We were talking to the event staff there at UVA at Davenport Field, and it was pretty funny. So we were just talking about the way things unfolded the previous day, and the event staff guy, he said, yeah, your fans were great. He said, but I do have to admit, there was one woman who made it clear that y'all had beaten our ass.
There will always be a handful at every fan base. No one's different than anyone else. A buddy of mine from here in Winston-Salem, he was there. His mom's a Virginia grad. And I chatted with him shortly after that weekend when I came back here to Winston-Salem, and he was remarking about the fans that he interacted with, ECU-related, that were just, you know, great to be around. And the folks in Lubbock the next weekend said the same exact thing. to whenever I was walking around, you know, kind of fishing around for interviews or whatever the case might be. There's an understanding from most of the folks in college baseball. Maybe not our friends in Tampa, but everyone else really in college baseball about this kind of what this fan base is and how passionate this group is. And I remember this was just after the 2018 regional where I believe it's USA Today, maybe it's Baseball America. They were in the jungle for the regional and they wrote an article about just what that environment was.
Yes.
And how underrated it was, and no one really knew about it in the grand scheme of college baseball. And that was kind of the coming out party of the jungle, where everyone was kind of, you know, took UNC Wilmington's left fielder under their wing and kind of brought him into the jungle. Like I think it's beginning to be noticed now.
Oh my God! Just what the program is, the old jungle.
I've heard stories about that. I have not seen that, and I will say. The only, and this is a small benefit, but the only good thing that happened after the Pirates were eliminated from the regional is I stuck around after that game. I spent the night before heading back out here to the Triad. And on Monday, I went back to the stadium to kind of, you know, say goodbye to the press box people and catch up with a few people. And I stayed and I watched probably about a third of the, maybe a quarter of the Wilmington, South Carolina game from the jungle. And it's my first time ever out there during a game. I obviously can't get out there during games. And so to kind of see, you know, it was much more sparsely attended. It wasn't the raucous environment that I knew it was the previous 2 days, but to kind of experience what everyone else finds so special out there, even for a game that the Pirates weren't participating in, that was pretty cool, and I've already made it known to the folks at the stadium that I want to get Coach O and I out there to call a game at some point next season to kind of set up out there. We just got to get the logistics figured out.
Hey, Corey,
yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, Corey, I had a question for you.
Sure.
You kind of alluded to it already, so it was on my list, and I know Bubba as well, questions. During the call of the tournament for the AAC, I noticed you enjoyed – the lineup as far as the schedule of the games. I'm saying that sarcastically. actually, the great thing about you is you're very even keel about things, and it was just funny, and it was funny how you were not so even keel on your distaste or dislike of the – can you give us an idea of what was going on behind the scenes? I've always wanted to know that, and I haven't asked you. We haven't talked since.
Yeah, sometime. I mean,
what was going on there?
You kind of name it. It was happening, and you know, looking back, you know, I don't at all regret anything I said. I believe that was the championship game when I kind of unleashed on the conference there for a little bit. But earlier in the week, when they started making the schedule changes, the forecast for that week was pretty dire, and so them kind of getting creative with playing on two fields that. At the same time and getting everybody in on one day, like it, you know, I will maintain, I like the creative thinking there, and it's the only tournament in America that could do something like that because of the venue there. And, you know, as an aside, have any of you guys been down to Clearwater for the tournament?
No, we not. I was watching on Facebook.
I mean, I'm about to kind of re-shred it here, but it's an unbelievable venue and just the setting for it. Not a lot of people go, but the reason why it's there is because it's such a great way to end the year for all these kids. And they get to play in a major league spring training stadium that is set up that way with practice fields available. I mean, there's a reason why it's there. Because the setup really can't be beat around college baseball. Now, back to this past May, it became clear, I mean, the Florida forecast changed on a minute. And so when no rain started happening in the early stage of the week, you kind of shoved it aside and you said, well, that's kind of Florida. You'd rather be prepared than not. But then when you started hearing that teams weren't being notified of schedule changes until after games were done, deep into the night, after a day of play was already over, when they had been told one thing previously, and then suddenly, oh, that was wrong. This was actually what was happening. That's when things started to take a turn, and when the number of teams started whittling down. And the biggest example I can think of was not ECU related. It was actually Tulane, who the Pirates helped lead to them being knocked out, that crazy come from behind win at the auxiliary field. They were told, as we all were, that there would be an off day on Wednesday after play on Tuesday, or I'm getting the schedule wrong, off day Thursday after play on Wednesday. That was it. Everyone was on the same page of that. And then suddenly, late that night, it was changed to, oh, we're all playing Thursday again. Tulane had done a bullpen day for who was going to be their next starting pitcher. Ooh. Had they played on Friday. He had to go on Thursday. He got shelled, and they were done. Like, there was very little understanding from, in my mind, the conference that you can't just shift baseball games around like this. There are off-day plans in place for pitching staffs that if those are not adhered to, you can risk some serious injury. And that led me to realize that, oh, there are people here from the conference, probably not the right people here from the conference. And, you know, it turned so frustrating for everyone involved, where the Pirates beat Houston in that run rule game to get to the championship game, which was scheduled for Sunday. And then right after the game was done, nope, it's Saturday. Sorry, it's going to be Saturday. And I remember Cliff very viscerally blowing a gasket on the field. And then UConn wanted to walk off about 45 minutes later to get there to the title game. And they were celebrating a walk off, and they found out from the PA announcer that, oh, the game is on Saturday, not Sunday. And suddenly the celebration turned to, what the hell is going on here? There was no communication from the conference to the eight programs there. And that's where the frustration really boiled over. Where, you know, heading into the championship game, I was waffling if I wanted to say anything, whether or not it was my place. And then I talked to the UConn broadcaster, Chris Jones, before the game, and they had kind of gotten, frankly, screwed over a lot more than the Pirates did. The Pirates wound up, frankly, the better of everybody. They'd never played a doubleheader in any one of those days. Everyone else did. But Chris Jones said, yeah, I kind of expressed my displeasure on the broadcast before the semifinal game, and that kind of clinched it for me. I was like, all right, I'm going to say something here. And I told Coach O in advance that I was going to say something about it. And if he wanted to contribute, if he wanted to participate, if he wanted to avoid it, that was up to him. Because he was an administrator with the tournament as well, one of the school administrators. And so he understood. I kind of told him a little bit about what I was going to say. And then I dove into it. That stuff like that for a conference that is very public was striving to be bigger than what they're perceived to be right now. At every sport can't have that level of dysfunction that they did for a sport that I don't think they realize they have is as good as it is. So I don't know if anyone from the conference ever heard any of that. I've not heard from the conference even to this day. But I hope that things maybe are changing a little bit with who from the conference is kind of in charge of organizing and implementing that tournament, because it was chaos, and there was barely any rain the whole week, and that made it even worse. So short story long, there were a lot of elements in play that week in Clearwater that should have never happened. A conference that is more put together for baseball wouldn't have allowed those things to occur.
Now, Corey, I'm saying a moment ago you were talking about the intrigue of potentially broadcasting a game from the jungle and working out the logistics of doing that. Last year when you had to broadcast a game from one of those auxiliary fields that you referenced a moment ago, I think it was you that had tweeted a picture, and you said it was, or maybe it was you tweeted the picture, and then Clip Brock of Pirate Radio made the comment, but it was like calling a game from a jail cell or something of that nature.
It was like watching through a prison chain link fence, yes. now, I will say this. The view that that we had for the two games we called there was on the roof of a office building just down the first base line. And I won't lie, the view wasn't awful from there. You just had the chain link fence right in your way. You know, Coach O and I still made the best of what we had up there, and it brought two pretty memorable games to the Pirates for that week. And I said during my, if you want to call it a rant, you can, in that championship game. But, I mean, the Philadelphia Phillies and the staff that were there, they had an immense amount of patience for everything that was changing that week. And they were unbelievable getting all of that organized when nothing around them was terribly organized to help them out. So they said, you know, here are the spots you can broadcast from. We can get you a tent so you're out of the sun. You know, here's our internet cables, and this is what we can do. Does it work? And, you know, broadcasters, we'll call games from the back of a truck. I've done it before. You find us a spot and we'll do it. But should it have gotten to that point? That is the main question that, frankly, I have my answer to, but I have not heard a direct answer from the conference on.
Corey, I was going to tell you a funny story really fast. I was doing color for high school this year, and the boss and owner of the radio station is doing play-by-play, and he called the school as a Christian school, 8-man football. And so he's like, are we good for the press box? Yes. And they had, this year was the first year is a very small press box. So we're trying to make sure that, yes, we're good for it. He called the athletic director and another official at the school. We get there. We're walking up to the press box, and the guy looks at us and says, hey, guys, can I help you? And we said, yeah, we're here to do the game. He said, well, not there. And we're like, well, where are we supposed to do the game from? We've called, you know, two to people. And we literally had to, this is a true story, we had to do a game where we shared a cell phone running up and down the sideline so we could see the game. I never thought, I've done a lot of things in my life in radio and a little bit with sports, and never experienced that. So I just, that brought back a memory there. And have you ever had to, what is your most challenging thing you've had to do calling a game?
Well, look, if I can clarify, you had to hold the cell phone to your ear and like run up and down the sideline, like behind the bench.
Yeah, we had a cell phone and we had it turned upside down like a microphone, and he did the boss did the play by play, and he handed the phone to me to do color.
That, all right, you beat me. Like that trumps my setup. The worst one I've had was actually from the back of an SUV, a truck. It was a semi pro football game. And we were in southeastern Wisconsin. I want to say it wasn't Racine. It was somewhere in the area for all you Midwestern kids out there. But they didn't have a press box. It was just kind of a rec field. And so what we did is my partner and I, program director that we called games together for, we backed our station vehicle up like on top of a grass berm that was maybe 5 feet higher than the sideline and maybe about 15 feet away from it. And we parked it at about 130 yard line, and then set up a table from the back cab of our truck. And if any play happened on the opposing 40 or down to the end zone, there was no shot of us seeing anything that was happening because we had players in our way. Like we had no way of seeing anything. That's the worst. Luckily, it's summer in Wisconsin, so it can be ungodly humid, but it was a pretty pleasant night. So it could have been far worse. But that is far and away the most strange setup I've had to call any sort of game. Semi-pro football in the Midwest, you can't beat it.
What's your preference, calling baseball, football, or basketball?
Baseball has always been kind of my number one sport as a fan and as a broadcaster. There's, you know, there are different layers to all of them where what I like about baseball is that you can kind of make the broadcast however you want it to sound. Like if you want to fill it with stats, you can. If you want to tell stories, you can. If you want to, you know, just kind of, you can mold it to whatever you want it to be. Whereas the pace of basketball dictates essentially how you call the game. Football is frankly, I've found the most challenging sport to do because there's a lot of action and then 30 seconds of stop and then a lot of action again. And you have to get it all quick and then reset and then set it all up. It's more challenging than I think folks realize. But baseball, there's something about the pace of it. It just allows you to be free, and no baseball broadcast sounds the same as another one because everyone kind of puts their own thumbprint on it. So, you know, I have my way of doing it. It differs greatly from, you know, my other cohorts in the American of how we call baseball, but it's always been the sport I've gravitated to as a fan and then with a microphone in front of me.
That's awesome. A quick story. It might have been your first season, or it was either your second season. It was 2016 or 2017. I was listening. I don't remember what game it was, but you were calling the game. It was an away game. You didn't have Coach O with you. You were calling it solo, and you started telling a story about your graduation day at Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
Snowing, and I never will forget this. Just listening to you tell that story. And you, it was just, it was a very long drawn story. Now, I loved it. I thought it was, I love stuff like that. I mean, it's complimentary. You're kind of nerdy. And I love that. It's great.
Yeah. My
wife was listening to the game, and suddenly she just goes, "Why does he keep telling the story about him graduating from Northern?" And she just explodes. I died laughing at her. He's filling time. But
that was, that was 17. That was a three-game series at Charlotte.
Okay.
And that was the weekend of ECU's graduation. But, no, it was maybe – no, it wasn't Charlotte. It was – ooh, now I'm blanking. It might have been USF. But it was graduation weekend in Greenville, but tornado warnings prevented it from happening. And so that sparked – my nightmare graduation ceremony from Northern Illinois, which thankfully they got my diploma name spelled right, but they did not say it properly.
That's
in
right.
The arena.
I remember from the story.
Yes.
I was gonna say, speaking of NIU, Corey, I remember seeing on social media earlier this fall, you went back for homecoming, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yes, I did.
I thought your Huskies are in the running to win the division and then meet up with probably Buffalo. Yeah, I mean, I think Buffalo may have already clinched. I'm not positive on that, but that'd be a heck of a matchup. What do you think about that in the MAC title game?
Yeah, I Huskies need one more win over the next two to lock up their spot. I would be lying if I thought I said NIU had a decent chance against Buffalo. That's a really good Buffalo team that's, you know, it's the MAC, and so it doesn't get the attention except for just weird weeknight football. But Buffalo is a frightening team, and they could probably put more points up on NIU, even though the Huskies' defense is really stout. I'm sure your listeners are loving this MAC breakdown. Thank you for the question. I've kind of trained myself as an NIU alum to kind of figure that they will be in the running for a division more years than not, which is fantastic, and it should never get old. But know that when it comes to them being put on a somewhat bigger stage, whether it's a title game or a bowl game, they're just not going to get it done. It's just been kind of them over the last – I won't lie. They spoiled me with an Orange Bowl appearance not too long ago. And they lost.
Poor Corey with the NIU Huskies only playing for conference championships and going to the Orange Bowl and losing. I mean, God, we feel so far sorry for you.
I mean, if you see crowd shots in DeKalb, I mean, there's room for if you want to jump aboard. Like, we got plenty of tickets available at NIU at Husky Stadium. So I'm just saying, you're going to have some Tuesday night games in 20-degree weather that you're going to have to combat with, because God bless the Mac.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we ain't filling that joint up even with good seasons.
You know, Corey, you don't have to comment on this. We have something in common with NIU fans. You guys probably
know. Oh,
what
yes.
It is.
No, I know exactly.
We all don't like Jeff Confort.
and I'll say this, and I will phrase this as well as I can here, because I worked with NIU Athletics in my time there while Jeff Confort was there. And he was able to maintain and even grow a football program that had reached some pretty crazy heights, more so than you kind of ever really would have imagined for a school like NIU, and really cultivated interest, not just in football, but the other athletic programs there. I knew the type of guy that he was at DeKalb. And frankly, when I saw him move down to ECU, this is me not really knowing a ton about the school heading in. I was still up in Illinois by this point, working after school. But the fit made sense. Like, they're very similar environments, very similar towns with what these colleges are kind of built around. And so the fit truly in my mind made sense when it happened. It, as the years progressed, certainly didn't pan out that way. And it surprised me from after seeing the work that he did at NIU. I thought it would land here. It didn't turn out to be that way. I mean, I will say this, the biggest difference between NIU and ECU is that there is a much stronger, larger and more passionate fan base at ECU than there is at NIU. And I think that might have led to some surprise from Confer and the folks that came down from DeKalb with him. I wish it would have worked out, because he did a lot for my alma mater and now a school that means a lot to me at ECU, and it's unfortunate that it didn't.
Coming from that NIU background and, like you said, making the Orange Bowl under Coach Dorn, that's what talk about UCF. Of course, the new poll came out tonight for the college football playoff. UCF, I think, was still 11th. Is that correct, guys?
That's correct, yeah.
So, I mean, and these guys have won, what, 22 straight games now and, of course,
right,
knocked off Auburn last year. Talk about your thoughts there as far as where they are and where they should be.
You know, we're all quote unquote, I got in trouble during baseball season last year for saying the term mid-major. But yes, that did garner a little bit of reaction. But when you're talking about, you know, as much as the American wants to claim Power Six, it's not there yet. UCF is doing every possible thing they can to prove that they belong in the discussion, just like Boise State has done in the past, just like NIU did briefly, and they might have killed the BCS for all of us, so you're welcome from NIU Nation. Just like a lot of the – like Houston most recently was just in the same boat. They're doing everything possible to make their case. The system in place is not built for schools like UCF, schools like ECU, schools like NIU, and it's not going to be. Like, that's where we are. It's not going to change because there's too much money at play for the Power Five conferences to share amongst any other conference, whether it's the American or the Mountain West or the MAC, that wants to try and get a piece of this. The deal, the current playoff system, is not done for another 6 years. So all the debate, all the discussion about expanding the playoff to 8 teams, which I am 100% for, they're meaningless right now because it's not going to happen. I think all the talk about why UCF isn't further up the rankings, you know, they can make their cases and they have some fair ones. No one can sit there and say that UCF doesn't belong somewhat in this discussion here with everything that they've done. But it's also detracting from something pretty remarkable that they're doing. 22 in a row is insane. And you remember 3 years ago when they were winless. I mean, what's happened there is astounding. That doesn't get enough attention because there is so much national backlash about what they did last year. And it's not going to change, and it's been the case for years. It will always be slanted against mid-major, the group of five conferences. And it's frustrating. It's very frustrating because you want to strive for something more when you're a part of these schools, but it's just not going to happen. Does UCF belong in the playoff this year? Probably not. Not with what I've seen around college football, but they certainly don't deserve all the negative attention and the vitriol that is being sent their way. That's an unbelievable job that's happening in Orlando that is getting overshadowed by people in the SEC, the ACC, the worldwide leader, screaming about how they don't belong.
Yeah, game day live from Orlando this week.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting. It could be a really good thing for the American, as long as Kirk Herbstreit remembers the name of the conference.
The Athletic.
The Athletic. I mean, I know everyone's joining the Athletic recently, but UCF and Cincinnati are not. I mean, it's a huge game. It means a ton for the conference, and to have game day there, and now we're going to see just how ESPN handles that environment, because they have been very vocal about why UCF should, you know, pick up their ball and go home and shut up. Like, to put it bluntly, that Kirk Herbstreit a couple of weeks ago was all about how UCF's schedule doesn't match up against Utah State or Boise State or Fresno State or Buffalo or any of these mid-majors that are having very good years. And the anger was pretty strong in what ESPN has been saying about UCF. What will that be like this weekend? I'm glad they're going down there, because that's the game that should be getting the focus this weekend, even though you can make a case for Syracuse and Notre Dame. But I mean, you're talking about, you know, I'm a media nerd. You know, I was already called a nerd once on this podcast.
Complimentary, Corey.
I will take it and I will frame it. But, you know, ESPN's a media partner with the American. Like, I mean,
exactly.
So to have this type of, you know, negative connotations about a conference that they're in business with, and they did the exact same thing with Washington and the Pac-12 last year. Yep. It started again this year. It's very strange. They don't need to be complimentary of everybody that they're in business with, but they've shown their cards a few times when it comes to college athletics about just who is more important to them. And we are seeing that this year. And so Saturday will be fascinating to watch play out for game day. And then the game should be a hell of a game between those two.
Corey, what did you think, or maybe you weren't even aware of this because it was so buried, but back in August, you probably did realize this, the NCAA had to recognize UCF as co-national champions with Alabama.
I did not see that. I mean,
yes.
I know what UCF has done marketing.
Oh, they had, no. Yeah. Look it up. They had to recognize it. In August, there was an old, I'll try to explain it the best I can. There was an old ranking that was left in the NCAA rule books from the old BCS system. Maybe somebody can Google this real fast. And it was just basically something they didn't take off the books. And based on that matrix, UCF was co-national champions. And somebody at UCF realized this, approached the NCAA about it, and they had to recognize them as co-national champions. And it was buried. The story was buried. Well, Bubba, do you have what that matrix was called? It was the Coley matrix, maybe?
Yeah, that's how I was just looking it up. Yeah, the Coley or Collie matrix.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe it's because we are, you know, we are fans and involved with a program in that same conference. But, you know, I know a good many friends that went to school in ACC schools, SEC, fans of SEC, Big Ten, wherever you spread across the Power Five, that continue to be annoyed by UCF's national championship claim. And I would always respond with, who's it hurting? Like who's getting this angered by them doing this? Like, let them do it. What's the problem? If you're an Alabama fan and you're sick and tired of UCF trying to take away your fifth title in 9 years, you know, you have your case to make. But aside from that, like, let UCF have their fun. Like, that's what this all screamed to me, is they're being very serious about what they're trying to do there in Orlando. But what's the harm in any of this? Like, what that's why all the fiery rage directed towards UCF over the last, you know, calendar year has been so asinine to me, because it's college athletics. These are kids.
It's simple, Corey. It's simple. They don't know their place. People can't stand it when people don't know their place.
Yeah.
Sit down and shut up and, you know your place. And my whole problem with this whole mid-major group of five, power five thing is because it's bullcrap. I'll give you an example. Your alma mater, Northern Illinois, the University of Illinois in Champaign, they've got the better football program, Northern Illinois. It's not the top tier. It's not Penn State. It's not Michigan. It's not Ohio State. It's not Alabama and Auburn and Georgia in the SEC. It's the fact that the people sit there and tell me that Illinois or Vanderbilt or Wake Forest, well, Wake, you know, maybe a little better, but these schools are power and UCF isn't, or when we're good that we're not. To me, it's nonsense. There's a handful of schools, truthfully. South Carolina has as much chance of competing for a national championship as East Carolina does in football. It's not going to happen. Alabama, Clemson, Florida State, Oklahoma, USC, Notre Dame, it's going to be it's not even, if you really break it down, it's not even power conferences, it's power teams. There's about 10 teams that legitimately ever have a chance of winning a national championship in college football.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. I mean, it's been that way for the last decade and a half. You have to go back to the early, early 2000s when Texas, Texas is back, hashtag. But you got like Miami in the early going there in the 01, 02 area. It's funny you mentioned like Florida State and USC. I mean, they're blue bloods, but whoa, boy, are they awful right now. I mean, it's funny. I produced a show out here for IMG, and we had Mark Daniels on last week. He's the voice of UCF. And he, you know, obviously he feels pretty passionate about what's going on surrounding UCF and all the attention that they're getting, both positive and negative. And the biggest thing that always gets me, and I have this debate many a time with the hashtag Power Five friends that I have, it always comes down to the schedule. Like that's the main argument that people have when it comes to UCF not being involved here. And the schedule's weak. There's no question about it. That's because the Conference of the American is down. But the lack of understanding as to how these schedules are made in non-conference season, not just for football, but basketball is the same way. When it comes to, you know, American teams, MAC teams, Mountain West teams, trying all their might to actually schedule big names to come to them, to do a neutral site game, to not lose money in the process, and schedule a game for 8 years down the road. Like what you're seeing are people acting like these schedules were put together in July. They're not. Like they're put together like back in 08. Like that's how far back scheduling goes in football. And so, you know, Mark brought up to me, next year they have Stanford on the schedule. Like they will play Stanford. They scheduled them after Stanford went to a Rose Bowl. Stanford this year is pretty average. And so they're going to get knocked down a peg if Stanford doesn't rebound next year But when they put them on the card, they were one of the best teams in the nation. Like, it's there's no understanding from folks in the Power Five and the worldwide leader, or just an ignorance to how mid-majors are fighting and clawing to schedule teams to put on their schedule to better their resumes. Boise State went through this for years. And then you go to basketball, where Gonzaga went through this for years, and now they're finally getting that put together. Loyola Chicago is now going through it after their Final Four run. No one wants to play these teams because Power Five teams don't see a benefit to it, when in reality, a win over UCF is better than a win over Illinois.
I got an idea, Corey.
Yeah.
I'll tell all the teams right now, schedule East Carolina. We're terrible. And then 5 or 10 years, we'll definitely be better. And
there you go. See, you got to play the long game. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to say about UCF. Are they going to start getting credit for the win over Pitt? I mean, Pitt has a chance to win their division of the ACC.
Yeah, Pitt wins this weekend, they win the division. I've thought about that too. And they had UCF had a game against North Carolina, rained out, I believe. And this is the third year in a row they've had a game wiped out due to weather. So, I mean, will they start getting credit for that? We know the answer.
Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, is that going to happen? It could. I have my doubts, but it could. I think that the sooner that we all realize that a team like UCF making its way into the fold for a college football playoff will not happen until it expands. It's that simple.
Now, I know you said with the TV contract, you don't think it would. There's any chance for it to expand sooner. Scenario: two SEC teams, Notre Dame, only one other Power Five conference gets in.
Yeah, I think that's possible if Georgia wins the SEC championship game.
Right.
I certainly think that's possible. You would need probably another domino to fall, where, you know, I don't think you cannot leave an undefeated Clemson out. And if Michigan runs the table, then there's your other challenger for Alabama. Now you would add in, what's the better loss if you're playing out the hypothetical string here, where Michigan lost week one at Notre Dame and Alabama lost in the title game to Georgia and the 13th data point that not every team has on a neutral site. You know, we've seen Alabama last year backdoor their way into the playoff, and they won it. They will get some semblance of a benefit of a doubt. I would love to see a team like Michigan make it instead of Alabama, because I think there's just natural Alabama fatigue. But the caveat to that is this, and, you know, I don't know how much you guys have watched Alabama this year. They're a hell of a lot of fun. Like, they're more fun than normal this year with that offense and Tagovailoa. I mean, it would be a show if they're in the playoff, but the name, the colors, the coach, I think people around the country are a little tired of that.
Absolutely.
I would be absolutely flabbergasted if they're not in the Final Four in some capacity.
Yeah, Ohio State beats Michigan. That'll take care of itself.
I don't know if I'm with you on that one. Ohio State's a mess.
They'll get it together and beat Michigan. Watch.
It seems like it's been a thorn in Harbaugh's side. It's kind of funny.
It has
in
been.
Some respect. Well, Corey, I appreciate you, man. I tell you what, I didn't realize. I was just looking at the clock. We've been we were planning on maybe like 20 or 30 minutes for that, but you've been generous with your time, and we hope that we can have you on back a few times before the season, and obviously. During the season, we hope we can have you on a lot, because we're planning. We won't tell everything what we're doing right now. We're still in the planning stages, but we've got some cool stuff that we hope we can pull off and make it happen. And certainly, we obviously love East Carolina, and we love what Cliff Godwin's doing. Love what you're doing with the call of the game, and we hope that we can. Another thing is that we can give you some movie lines too throughout the season.
Yeah, we're gonna have to figure out what will be in place for that next year. I gotta say, this was a pretty terrific dress rehearsal we did, gentlemen. When do we start recording the real podcast here?
we can
that
do
was
that
it,
next.
Corey. That was it.
Oh, my goodness. All right, my check's in the mail.
Yeah, we'll send you the 1500, I promise. It's in,
yeah. In the mail. 1500, that seems to be the standard.
Displace Kyle's second half and send me that one.
All right. Kyle, can you do that? Can you take one for the team?
He literally cut the check in half, literally, like right down the middle.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me again. It was very fun to chat baseball and then random musings on sports life with you here. And yeah, we are not too, what, we are 3 months out here from the start of baseball. So, I mean, it's far away, but it ain't that far. So get your mind right. The Clarksville Players opening soon.
All right. Well, I appreciate you, Corey, Kyle, and Bubba. Thank you guys very much. We're going to wrap this thing up. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.